Hello out there, and welcome to Impact, the official podcast of Drexel University's School of Education's Education Doctorate Program. I'm Dr. Deanna Hill, here with my podcasting partner, Dr. Stephanie Smith-Budai, and we're pleased to have Dr. Brandon Wallace join us today on Impact. Dr. Wallace is an associate professor at Montgomery College in the Washington, D.C. area, and a faculty associate at Johns Hopkins University in D.C. He also writes curricula internationally, is an in-demand speaker, serves on several committees for multiple national assessments, and is authoring several publications, which I hope he'll tell us more about today. We're very excited to have Dr. Wallace as a guest today to learn about the impact that his Drexel EdD has had on his leadership and scholarship. So, Dr. Wallace, tell us about what you've been up to professionally since you graduated with your EdD in Educational Leadership and Management from Drexel.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate that. What I've been up to, juggling a lot of things, As you said, I'm an associate professor in the School of Education at Montgomery College, and I've expanded my role in that by starting a little group called Educators Rising. And so having the opportunity to really allow the next future generation of educators to come on the stage and have their voices heard, especially in the community college context, really meant a lot to me. So I started that really cool group at Montgomery College. I'm the principal of Wallace Education Enterprises, which is an education consultant firm right here in the DMV, the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia area. That's what DMV stands for us. And one of the things that I love about the consultancy is it's given me a lot of opportunity to reach throughout DC, Maryland, and Virginia to ensure that students, particularly students with disabilities, get the supports and interventions that they need vis-a-vis from their teachers, their administrators, and things like that. And so since graduating, the business has been booming. I can barely keep up. But I'm making it happen. And just a litany of other things, writing and, you know, bolstering my social media network. And so it's been a lot of juggling, but a lot of good juggling balls for sure.
All right. Sounds like a lot is going on, Dr. Wallace, since you've graduated, and a lot more to come, I imagine. So as you are aware, the Drexel EdD program is designed to prepare scholarly practitioners to identify and address problems of practice in their own professional context. So what made the Drexel EdD appealing to you? And then what were you looking for in a doctoral program when you decided on Drexel?
So I have to kind of tell you a little bit of my narrative to make this make sense. So Drexel was my third doctoral program. And I started at one program. I moved from my house in Maryland to North Carolina, and I wasn't really getting more than what I got from my master's program. I didn't feel like I was adding to my knowledge. And so I came back to work in Maryland, moved back home, moved back to my mama's house through that wonderful familial support. And I decided to kind of go another route. And so a few years after that, I started at another doctoral program in the South, but this was online. And again, I just didn't think that they had the amount of diversity and perspective that was going to enrich what I wanted to do, which was help figure out how to increase retention and recruitment rates of African-American males in community college context. And so I didn't think that that second program had the type of And I was in it for about only one semester, but from that one semester, I could tell that it wasn't probably going to give me what I needed in order for me to strengthen my voice and my advocacy for this particular niche group of men. And so I went to a session at Montgomery College, and it was, I can't remember who was the person presenting, but it was someone from Drexel. And just looking at the brochures and seeing the diversity just on the on the print material, I said, there's something that is there, something that's happening there that I haven't seen at other institutions of higher education. And so I emailed a whole bunch of people that have been in higher education. And I just kept on hearing good things about Drexel, good things about the commitment to their scholarship, but more importantly, how real they were, I don't want to say into the streets, but how on the grounds they were with making sure that the research was practical and it was going to make a difference. And so I honestly just gave myself one semester because I had almost given up on it, to tell you the truth. I was like, you know, this is strike three. And if it don't work now, it's just going to be what it is. And then after that first semester, seeing the cohort and the diversity there, seeing the professors and the information that I was learning, really made me strengthen my, I guess, aptitude to really want to do the best job I could at Drexel. And it really affirmed what I knew when I thought that Drexel was going to be my home of graduation. It really, that just first semester set me aflame or fire, if you will, up under me, because I was just like, I really want to stay within this program. I'm really learning a lot. And so that was the biggest difference in the commitment that I wanted to make at Drexel University.
That's wonderful to hear, Dr. Wallace. Well, you talked about the problem of practice and how central it is to the program, and obviously that extends to the dissertation. So tell us a little bit about your dissertation research. How did you come to the problem of practice that you selected? What did you learn about it? And then what would you say has been the most significant impact of your dissertation?
I think, well, I came to the problem of practice because I've been teaching at my school at Montgomery College for about 6 years at that time. And year after year, I would see less and less African-American males, just anecdotally, just like by observation. And so I was really curious on where were they going, because they're just not disappearing, they're not, you know, in thin air somewhere, but where they're going and what are their stories. And Drexel gave me the opportunity to really explore six African-American males' stories around their successful graduation. And I think that a lot of the literature that I was examining and being made to examine by other institutions was all deficit-based. It was just all, you know, there's a problem. And we kept on focusing on the bad numbers. And I understand that there's relevancy in understanding all forms of data and different data points. But I really wanted to center my work on people like me, people who had gone to college, graduated from college, and attained some type of success. And so Drexel was all on board because it seemed like every class I took centered on professional development, is centered on understanding your craft, it's centered on deeply asking hard questions, it's centered on working collaboratively with peers and colleagues. And so I knew that I was at the right place to do that type of right research. And now I think that the biggest impact that my research is having is that I've become very much the expert at my school to inform policies, more importantly, to inform practice, especially because I've been able to talk to senior vice presidents in their capacities to help improve the situation or the plight of African-American males. I've been able to expand the work that I'm doing with Educators Rising and just as an associate professor at Montgomery College to recruit and retain more African-American males who want to become teachers ultimately. And so I knew that Drexel was that place, especially as I was transitioning through quarter after quarter. But more importantly, I felt affirmed that my ideas would not just be shot down, that they would be challenged. My ideas were going to be challenged, but they weren't going to just be put aside or shot down for, you know, something that was more sexy or something that was more trendy. And so that was probably the best kind of trajectory for me. And the impact that I'm making, even right now, I'm thinking about the article that's coming from the dissertation that I wrote, which will be published later on this year. I'm thinking about some of the presentations that I've made at the Maryland Male Summit of Color. Just a lot of different opportunities that opened up for me to take a main stage and shedding light on the successes of African-American males in community college spaces. But more importantly, how do we make sure that they feel welcomed, secure, and supported in their journeys of higher education?
Wow, it's really incredible to hear about the impact of your dissertation work. And where can our listeners find the article that you mentioned?
The article is pending publication, but it's going to be in a new book. And of course, I don't have that book title with me right now. The contract is look at that. Here's the contract. The title of my piece is The Sixth Sense of Six Stories, Using Endarkened Empathy to Connect with African-American Males Through Narrative Inquiry. And again, it came straight out of the dissertation that I wrote through Drexel with my amazing chair, Dr. Deanna Hill. And it was submitted to the book. And the book is entitled Culturally Responsive Leadership for Academic and Social Equity and Justice in Schools.
Love it. And who's the publisher?
IGI, Global Publication.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. That's exciting. And I want to read it myself. So I'm looking forward to that. So I have a longer question for you. So bear with me and I'll try to wrestle with it. All right. So as you know, one of the Drexel differences is our focus on sustainable leadership, which connects with the title. But it also includes understanding how systems work and coming to understand how one's own worldview, values, beliefs, and habits of mind influences one's leadership. So having said that, how did this impact the way that you see yourself within your own context?
This is a really good question because one of the things that I learned through Drexel is propensity to bracket, you know, bracketing, to making sure that you try to eliminate as much bias by taking yourself, removing yourself as best as you can, the subjectivity of yourself from the objectivity of the research. However, I also understand my journey of becoming an educator so much clearer now after having done my research, because so many of the linkages between me and the participants of my study were identical. So the amount of familial strategies that they employ, that type of cultural competence and capacity that they were able to yield, how they were able to navigate very complex, racist at many times systems. I found myself literally looking almost like at myself. It was almost like a mirrored image of me as I was talking to these African-American males. And it really started to underscore the importance of why African-American males have to be in this research space, why we have to share our stories. And then more importantly, how we find ourselves in our own work. And then what do we do to help another one come through? And so by sharing their stories, I really believe that it's going to encourage the capacity for so many African-American males to say, I can see myself having gone through some disappointments, having gone through some ups and downs of life, but still being able to successfully graduate. And that's so many people's stories. However, because we don't get to hear African-American males' stories as often as the majority, it sometimes gets lost in the sauce, especially when you start coupling it with deficit mindsets and you know the outcome data that we see quantifiably. But one of the things that I have learned most about me is that I was much more empathic than I thought I was. I was much more appreciative of my journey, which I never thought I would say out loud, because, you know, sometimes the journey is just hard and filled with a lot of attacks and trouble and issues. But I really have been able to think back over the many years of undergraduate, master's, and now the doctoral program, but seeing myself in my participants and allowing their voices to tell their stories meant everything to me. And it still kind of underscores in many ways why we have to, as African-American males in particular, elevate our stories as best as we can through social media, through these types of platforms like blogging and vlogging and things like that. And so it's really, I think the research has absolutely done more for me than it has for anyone else who will ever read this research.
That's outstanding and inspirational, Dr. Wallace. I mean, just thinking about where you are and what you are contributing to the field. So thank you. You actually spoke to this a little bit already, but I want to ask you about it directly. So, you know, addressing issues of equity, inclusion, and social justice is at the core of teaching, learning, and scholarship in the EDD program. In fact, we just have revised our EDD keystones to make that commitment more explicit and visible. So how has your experience as a Drexel EDD student or in your dissertation research, how has it impacted your ability to contribute to equity, social justice, or anti-racist practices in your current professional practice?
I love that question for so many reasons. And one of the reasons why it took me so many times to find the right doctoral program was because of my commitment to social justice. I started out as a Baltimore City public school teacher, and I stayed in that role for 7-8 years. I love Baltimore City. I loved seeing the type of impact I was having there, but I knew it could be larger if I could teach teachers how to teach students of color with more empathy, with more cultural capital and things like that. One of the things that I loved about Drexel that just kept me there was their commitment to social justice, but their increased and advanced commitment to name that thing. I think that sometimes, especially the things that kept me from feeling successful, was, you know that something is racist. You know that someone's being ageist. You know that there's ableism somewhere in the room. You know that there's some type of discriminatory practice, but folks aren't really naming it. They're kind of glossing over it or pretending it's not there. And at Drexel, there was one class in particular that really allowed us to name these things and to have those very difficult conversations in a very diverse crowd, and having different perspectives heard and different emotions even seen. And so one of the things that I know, especially in terms of diversity and anti-racist practices, this research is situated in many ways on that, especially as I talked to these African-American males who said, you know, yes, I was treated differently. And I was treated differently than my white peers by these specific professors, because I know that this student was able to hand in something late and I wasn't able to hand in certain things late. And when you go through some measures of academia, you understand now, like, it happened to me too. So it validates my story. It helps corroborate the realness of my reality. But it also underscores this passion of making sure you right the wrong, making sure that you say and publish that these are the stories that these people are saying. And so if you are experiencing these types of sensations, you're not crazy. You're not going insane. These are things that are really happening. However, what are you going to do about it now? What are you going to do about it? It just can't be we have all these data. Now, what are we going to do about it? And so that's helped me in particular work with the Build Our Network for Diversity, which is a Black and Brown Male of Educators consortium that allows for that free space of Black men to speak right here in the DMV area. I've worked a lot with Bowie State University, my HBCU alma mater, but particularly the Bowie Black Male Educators Leaders Alliance, getting these data out there so that we can connect with more African-American males who are already in the teaching field to show them support and things like that. And so it has taken a very, when I heard the term theory to practice, it was a term, just like a cool phrase that everyone starts to use. But I can absolutely say that, I mean, it's just so evident in all the things that I'm doing right now, the talks that I'm giving and the things that I'm publishing, that this is a very, very real way to connect theory to practice, especially after this type of education.
Amazing, amazing. Dr. Wallace, you have already accomplished so much. You have been an educator, a consultant, an administrator, author. But out of it all, what has been the greatest impact of the EDD on your career so far?
The greatest impact, honestly, the greatest impact, I don't know how this is going to sound, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm just not going to invite me back to the next podcast. The greatest impact is the interesting new measure of respect that I get after the letters are behind the name. And so before, I was still bold and walk into the room and say what I wanted to say, but you can always feel a sense of the greenness. First of all, I already look young. You know, I'm a millennial, I'm under 40. And so I'm already an anomaly within higher education, especially when you think of what NCES says about the statistics on Black male associate professors in the field. And so I'm already the only other, right? I'm already the youngest, the Blackest, the malest, the whatever is in the room. But one of the things that the doctorate has given me is credence and credibility. And when it used to be, you know, what do you want to say, Brandon? But now it's, Dr. Wallace, what would you like to add? And just those types of phrases make a difference in the seriousness of tone, of course, but more importantly, how far the comment can go and whose ears they stick to. Unfortunately or fortunately, in higher education, it makes a difference. It absolutely makes a difference. In order for you to have limitless possibilities where people aren't saying, well, if you just got this one degree or this is the only thing holding you back, now you can't use that card against me. Nothing's holding me back. And so my voice is real, it's rich, but it helps to substantiate some of the subject matter that I bring to the table at times.
That's incredibly significant. And I'm glad you said it, because I think we talk about, you know, having a seat at the table and being heard in different ways and right and being asked to contribute to things that you might not have otherwise. So I appreciate that. I think that's a really important point. So with that, what's next for you? What do you see for yourself within the next 5-10 years?
I don't know. I'm literally living a dream. You know, I'm the middle of 7 kids. I grew up in the projects. I had a very interesting rich dad, poor dad life. And so by all statistics and measures, I'm not supposed to be where I am, you know? And so everything on top of what I've already gotten is just going to be more blessings to receive. And so what's next for me, I absolutely know in February, I get to go up for full professor. And so I have my points and all that other stuff. And so, and then that's another thing about getting the doctoral. And that's another, well, to your other question earlier, it's helping me get full professorship too. And so now I'm an associate professor, and because of the doctorate, I get my 4 points added. And it's an interesting system. I'm not gonna get to the points thing, but I'm qualified to be a full professor next month. And so I'm gonna put in my paperwork and my packet. So I'll be under 40 full professor. And it feels good to say that. What's next for me is helping more students, honestly, helping more students that look like me, helping more students that want to learn how to help students that look like me, helping more urban intensive and urban emergent, that's Rich Milner's words, environments, so that I can make sure that my living's not in vain. What's next for me is making a few more enemies, because when you're on the side of the oppressed, a lot of folks don't like it. And so that's some of the things that are what's next for me. But what's my favorite, most exciting, the thing that is literally giving me goosebumps right now is what's next for me is my partner and I, my partner Rachel and I, as you can see, I'm too excited. My partner Rachel and I are expecting our first daughter, our first child. And we intend to name her Zora, of course, after the Zora Neale Hurston. And so that's coming in the summer. And so that's probably, I can't get the smile off my face, but that's probably the most exciting thing that's next for me, for sure.
Right. Well, congratulations on adding to your family and your upcoming promotion to full professor. It's amazing. And, you know, as a statistics, as you mentioned, there are not a lot of Black people or Black males in particular who make it to full professor. So I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
And just keep on doing what you do. I'm sure that your living will not be in vain. It's not in vain. And when you said that, now I can't get the Clark sisters out of my head. that song. So, but you know, we want to thank you for sharing the impact that the EDD has had on your professional practice. And we have a few lighter questions for you now.
Sure.
All right. So what has been your favorite place that you've traveled to?
My most favorite place that I have traveled to is, it would probably be, so I have a few now, of course. So in my living room, I have little jars of sand, all over my house. I have little jars of sand. And I'm not sure why I showed it because it's a podcast, but... I have all these jars of sand from Cuba to Abu Dhabi to Dubai to Jamaica to, I've been a lot of places. My most favorite place is now Jamaica, because that's where I found out that I was going to be a dad. That's where Rachel shared that information with me. And that was actually one of the first trips we took together as a couple. And if I would do a second to Jamaica, it might be Ghana. It has to be Ghana, actually. I went to Ghana in 2019 for the year of return, marking the 400 year anniversary from 1619 to 2019. And yes, I believe in 1619, that whole project. But long story short, I went back to kind of connect to my roots. I had done an African ancestry DNA test, and I found out that I was from Burkina Faso, a landlocked country right next to Ghana. And you know, the lines are just arbitrary. It's what man kind of says, this is your country. And so I had such a strong beckoning to go to Ghana. And so I spent about a week there. I went to the castles, Amina Castle, Gold Coast Castle, and it was a pretty transformative journey, I'll say. And so Ghana would probably be my second to Jamaica.
All right. Great, great places.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, this one might be a little harder to respond to on the spot, but if you could trade places with someone for a single day, who would it be and why?
This isn't going to be hard. And this is such a cop-out, but again, and not to say that my world revolves around Rachel, but I would love to trade places with her for one day. I'm going to tell you why right now, especially because she's having some bouts with morning sickness. And I feel like it's all my fault. So I wish I could just take one of those days of that nausea and that the sickness away from her. But I have to say that on the record so I don't get in trouble. But if it was anybody else, I would love to trade places for one day with President Barack Obama. I've met him twice. And just being in his space and witnessing his countenance demands that you just want to know what's in his mind. You know, you just want to know what's in his head. And of course, he's a girl dad, and I'm going to be a girl dad. So I'd like to steal some of his notes. And so probably President Barack Obama will be my second choice.
Excellent. Excellent. How did you meet Doctor? How did you meet President Obama twice?
So one of my great friends, his name was Derwin. He was working advance for Mrs. Obama. And advance is interesting because it's like a secret world in politicos. So advance is like the position that you take when you go in advance to like the president or the vice president or something. You're like helping set up their podium and the wherever they're going to be next. You go in advance of where they are and you kind of get the hotels together. You're like the boots on the ground pregame kind of person. And so I was able to go to the white egg Easter egg roll hunt with my nephew Christopher and meet the Obamas there. I went to when the Obamas were in the last Black History Month of their reign, because they're regal, right? Of their reign, I was able to go to the White House. And let me just tell y'all this. That the champagne, when the Obamas was there, the champagne tasted better than any champagne I'd ever had in my life. The hors d'oeuvres were better than any hors d'oeuvres I've ever had in my life, and a few other times. But especially, and just to add, you know, being in the DC area, it's very underwhelming. I'll say to me, any political person, you know, it's one thing if you're in, you know, Wisconsin or South Dakota, but literally when you all live in the Beltway together, you'll always see some type of political person. At I saw Mrs. Obama at SoulCycle some years ago on U Street. So it's a thrill, but it's not that surprising.
All right, great. Thanks for sharing.
So come on, move down to DC. You can meet them all. You can meet them as many times as you want.
All right, last question. If you can learn a new skill, what would it be?
If I can learn it, hands down, will be playing the piano. If I can learn a new skill, I would love to learn how to play the piano. And I already feel really bad for Zora because those piano lessons are going to be nonstop. She's going to be in piano lessons all day long. Now, I've always had that dream of one day I walk into a beautiful Kennedy Center, you know, orchestra something. And the pianist, you know, his wrist is broken and they're screaming, is there a pianist in the room? Is there a pianist in the room? And I kind of get up and walk up and I start playing the piano. So that's like my big vision for my entire life. And so if it was a new skill, I would love to learn how to play the piano for sure.
All right. Well, that's great. I always thought that was a beautiful instrument to learn.
Yeah.
It's difficult just because most people don't have a piano at home to sort of practice on. So look forward to hearing some of little Zora's future.
Her compositions, absolutely.
Baritones, that's right. That's beautiful. Well, thank you again. This has been amazing. It was wonderful to have you with us. It's been a pleasure, again, to have ADD alumnus Dr. Brandon Wallace on Impact today. Thank you, Dr. Wallace, for sharing with us today. It's, you know, we're always incredibly honored and excited to hear the amazing ways that our ADD alums are having an impact in the world, and you certainly exemplified that today. So Dr. Wallace's bio will be posted with the link to this episode on our EDD program website. Again, congratulations, Dr. Wallace, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Impact. We look forward to the next episode where we hear from other alums about the impact that earning a Drexel EdD has had on their professional practice, research, policy changes, and the larger society. Goodbye for now.